your convenience. Or down the spout. Or ladies, please be seated. Or up the workers. Or labour relations are the people who come to see you when you're having a baby. Starring Sydney James as Sid, Kenneth Williams as Mr. Boggs, Charles Hawtrey as Mr. Coote, Joan Sims as Chloe, and Hattie Jakes as Beattie. With Bernard Breslaw as Bernie, Kenneth Cope as Vic, Patsy Rowlands as Miss Withering, Jackie Piper as Myrtle, and Richard O'Callaghan as Lewis. Music composed and conducted by Eric Rogers. Screenplay by Talbot Rothwell. Produced by Peter Rogers. Directed by Gerald Thomas. Daytime. A sign at the gates of a factory reads, William C. Boggs and Son, makers of fine toiletware, established 1870. On the factory floor, men and women in long white coats and overalls are busy putting the finishing touches to urinals and toilet bowls of various colours.
Four matching pairs, blue and green wash basins for Carter's Aberdeen.
Check.
Two princess suites complete with stainless steel fittings for Girlings London.
Check.
Six white top flushing urinals.
Stand up ones.
Is there any other sort?
I only asked. Funny things happen these days.
Six white top flushing urinals, regular design, for the YWCA Wigan. One matching pair. The YWCA? Hey, you're right. Funny things do happen these days.
A glum-faced Miss Withering is slouched on a spotty patterned toilet in a mock-up of a bathroom in the middle of Mr. Boggs's office.
Well, Miss Withering, how does it feel? Comfortable?
Yes, I think so, Mr. Boggs.
Good, good. Comfort before beauty. That's what I always say.
A bit big in the bowl, I think.
It is only 2 centimetres more than our last model, and I'm sure we shan't fall out over that.
It's falling in, I'm worried about.
No, I like your overall design, Mr. Coote.
Oh, thank you, sir.
May I get off now, please?
Yes, of course, Miss Withering, and thank you. You'll be most patient.
Yes, like Job on a monument. And what a monument.
We must make sure the catch is strong enough to support the seat.
Do you mind if I try it?
No, go ahead. Okay. Yes, do.
Sitting down on the toilet, Sid puts a pipe in his mouth and unfolds a newspaper, which he holds out in front of him as he tries various seated positions for comfort.
Yes. I don't think I can stand it for more than half an hour.
It was hardly designed for a reading room.
Look at this. Very slender, this pedestal, isn't it?
It's streamlined.
What for? Wind resistance?
In any case, the thickness has nothing whatsoever to do with the tensile strength.
I hope you're right, Mr. Coote. I have had bitter experience of what happens when one of these collapses, or rather, my poor dear wife had. Rest her soul.
I can assure you, sir, an elephant could safely use that toilet.
Not without a much bigger bowl.
We can't afford to take any chances, Mr. Coote. No dependability before beauty, I always say. Miss Withering, if you wouldn't mind, just one more time. And this time, my dear, come down on it like a ton of bricks. So far, so good. Now, if you just bump up and down a bit. Excellent, excellent. Bump, bump.
Things that go in the night.
A young, attractive woman.
Yes, one matching pair of what?
Mutes.
One matching pair of... Aye?
Hello, Myrtle.
Oh, hello, Vic.
How about it this afternoon, then?
Not standing up.
No, sitting down. I've got these grandstand tickets, you see. The kick-off's at 3 o'clock. It should be a smashing match.
3 o'clock? Oh, how can we? We'll be working till 5:30.
I wouldn't bet on that if I were you, love. And I'll take you out for a bit of supper after and all.
Ooh.
Hello, Myrtle. Got a cup of tea for me, then.
Sorry, Bernie. No more floor service, I'm afraid.
Hey? What do you mean, no more floor service?
New rule. Drinks only to be served in the canteen during official breaks.
Well, that's what I call taking a diabolical liberty.
And that's something you know all about.
Hey!
Do you mind? Don't you worry, I'm not going to let them get away with this.
Ah, that's all right, Vic. I didn't really want a cup anyway.
Whether you want one or not is beside the point. That is completely irrelevant. This constitutes a direct infringement of the workers' rights.
Uh-oh. Old Tinderbottom's off again. Another blooming strike, I suppose.
Oh, no. What's it for? You know our Vic. He never has known what it's for. Oh.
Myrtle pushes her tea trolley into a man wearing a suit.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry, Mr. Box.
Quite all right, Miss Plummer. I should have started my hooter.
There he is. Old Silver Spoon. At it again.
I'll give over, Vic. He can't help being the boss's son.
Privileged class, sitting on his... That's what he is.
Privileged class? Do you know what the girls call him? Pencil doings. That's how privileged he is.
The young Mr. Boggs holds the door open for Myrtle.
Morning, all.
Morning, morning, Mr. Boggs!
Vic intercepts Mr. Boggs.
Hi there. I'd like to see you for a few moments, please, Mr. Lewis.
All right, but make it quick, will you, Spanner? I'm already late for a meeting.
It has come to my notice that a new rule has been introduced without consultation with me as a shop steward or with the works committee to the effect that tea may no longer be served outside the canteen.
That's right, I made it.
Oh, well then, as the union's appointed representative, I wish to lodge the strongest protest. It is a direct infringement of the workers' rights.
Oh, come off it, Spanner.
I can show you right here.
Well, what's that?
This is the Nookie rule book.
Oh, I say, they're making rules about that now, are they?
N-U-C-I-E, Nookie, Mr. Lewis, the National Union of Chinaware Industrial Employees.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Well, you know what you can do with their rule book.
What's that?
Let me give you a clue. These pages are just about the same size as our toilet paper holders. Now, do you get the idea?
Great big steaming public school net. All right, everyone, you all heard him. Direct aggravation of a genuine grievance. Stop work.
Everybody out!
There you are. What did I tell you?
Meeting in the canteen in 10 minutes. Tell everyone, Bernie.
Right. Meeting in the canteen in... Where was it?
10 minutes.
Meeting in 10 minutes' time in... Where was it?
In the canteen.
Meeting in 10 minutes' time...
All right, hey, now!
Lewis opens the office door, only to be confronted by the sight of Miss Withering on the toilet.
Excuse me.
Lewis, my boy. It's all right. We're just discussing the new Princess Beatrice suite. Come on in.
Oh, I see.
There we are.
No, no, no. Please don't get up, Miss Withering.
But I want to get up, Mr. Lewis.
Well, what do you think of it, my boy? Rather elegant, wouldn't you say?
Yes, but, Dad, I thought we were going to modernize our stuff. And I thought we were going to include a bidet in our new range.
Oh, yes. I designed one. But Mr. Boggs sat on it. On the idea, I mean.
I do not think bidets are quite us.
But, Dad, all our competitors are making them now.
No, dear sir, but I didn't think that the high cost of production coupled with the limited demand...
Limited demand? But I told you about that inquiry from abroad for 1,000 of the damn...
I know, my boy, but I don't think that my dear grandfather would have approved of the name Boggs being associated with such an article.
Oh, Mr. Plummer, can't you persuade him?
Well, quite frankly, Mr. Lewis, I don't see the use of him. It's easy enough to wash your feet in the bath, isn't it?
Bidets are not for washing your feet in, Mr. Plummer.
What else, then? Are they for dogs to drink out of?
No.
Lewis whispers.
You know why? Well, if it's for that, then you can always stand on your head under the shower.
Lewis, my boy.
Shh. Can you hear anything?
No.
Neither can I.
Well, that's all right, then.
No, it's not all right. I've stopped work.
The workers have gathered in the canteen.
I tell you, brothers, it is time we made a stand. It is time the bosses learnt that they can't mess the worker about. What do you say?
Down with them!
That's right, down with them. It is up to us to show the bloated bureaucrats that they can't grind our faces in the dust. What do you say?
Down with them!
That's right. You see, brothers, this issue isn't just over when or when not you can have a cuppa. Oh, no. This ruling is another blow aimed at the fundamental rights of the worker.
Here, here.
It's another little prod at the very vitals of your personal freedom.
I haven't noticed anyone prodding at my vitals.
Good for you, Chloe.
Ready for you any time, Chloe.
Yes, all right then. Yes, all right then, quiet please. Thank you, Mrs. Moore. But I seem to remember that you got very upset when they banned you women from wearing trousers. What do you say to that?
Down with them!
Hey, Bernie!
I didn't mean down with the trousers.
Anyway, brothers, I am now calling for an immediate stoppage of work, pending reinstatement of the tea rounds. Now then, all those in favour, raise your right hands. Count on Bernie.
Only Bernie has his hand up.
Are you in favour?
Of course I am, you fool.
Oh, well, that makes two.
Well, that's that. Mind if we get back to work, then?
No, would you wait just one more minute, please? I would like to make one last appeal to your reason and common sense. I'll call for one more vote. And in doing so, I would like you all to bear in mind the fact that the Rovers are playing at home this afternoon and the kickoff's at 3 o'clock. Right? All those in favour? Count them, Bernie.
All of the men have put their hands up.
Trouble. Well. Never saw so many people all wanting to leave the room at the same time.
I have to inform you, Mr. Plummer, it has just been decided by a majority vote that unless the tea rounds are brought back, there will be an immediate walkout.
Oh, yes. We're playing at home this afternoon, aren't we?
You're not going to let them get away with this, are you?
Leave it to me, Mr. Lewis. Now, look, Spanner, let's be sensible about this. You know very well that our extra tea rounds were something laid on by the management as a privilege. So doing away with them hardly breaks any of your union rules.
Ah, that's just where you're wrong. And I quote, section M, page 154, paragraph 79, B, treatment of the workers. Appropriate action may be taken if at any time the management fails to provide adequate facilities for catering to the workers' natural needs.
Natural needs?
Drinking is a natural need, is it not?
So sex. But that doesn't mean I have to lay on crumpet.
Very funny, Mr. Plummer. Very funny. What we want to know is, are you prepared to reinstate the tea rounds?
You know very well I can't do that. But as works foreman, I'll see to it that your complaint is passed on to the management in due course. All right?
No, I'm afraid not. We need a more positive guarantee than that.
Why don't we have a little talk about it?
No, I'm damned if we will.
Mr. Lewis, please.
No, now listen to me, all of you.
Oh, blimey.
Now, you may not understand exactly what it means, but since I've been working in this factory, I have made a time and motion study.
Oh, I know what it means, Mr. Lewis. And if you've got the time, I've certainly got the motion.
And don't think I hadn't noticed it, Mrs. Moore. Especially in your main production department.
Oh, you cheating devil!
Anyhow, I'd like to try and show you how it works.
She knows how it works, I promise you.
Mr. Lewis, we are evading the issue. Are we, or are we not, going to get what we want?
That's up to Mrs. Moore.
I mean on the factory floor.
Not ruddy lively.
All right, that's enough fun. Now let's get down to business.
Sounds just like my old man.
All right. In this factory, 166 extra mugs of tea are served in the average week. Now, on the basis that one worker has to make a trip to the toilet for every pint consumed, this means that he makes 16 trips in one day.
Ah, poor devil. He must have a weakness.
No, not quite, Mr. Hulk. It means, in fact, that allowing for an average time of 4.5 minutes for each trip to the toilet, 72 minutes are lost in each day, which equals 15 hours lost going to the toilet in 1 week. You see? So, what is the answer?
Tire not in it.
Quite. But a less painful solution, in my opinion, was simply to cut out the extra tea rounds. Now, doesn't that make sense?
Just one moment, please, Mr. Lewis. Am I to understand, then, that the management want the workers to stop going to their when they want to?
Well, no, I didn't say that exactly.
You just want to cut down on the number of trips that they want to make?
Well, yes, that's it, exactly.
I thought so. It is a clear case of restricted practice.
Right into it.
Everybody out!
The workers stream out of the factory, leaving Lewis and Myrtle alone in the canteen.
Fine mess I made of that.
Well, it would have been simpler to have done what they wanted.
I'm like you, I don't give in easily.
Well, you'll have to if you want them back tomorrow.
Yes, I know. Well, it gives us a free afternoon anyway.
Yeah. Us?
Yes, we'll have a nice run out into the country and then something to eat at a little pub I know.
Sorry, I'm busy.
I'll pick you up outside the Odeon at 2:30.
Lewis, it's no use.
And try not to be late. There's no waiting there.
Vic walks in.
Ah, Spanner. Thanks a lot, old man. For a moment there, I thought we were going to have to work this afternoon.
Hey?
Dead worried I was.
Oh, yes. But what about your loss of production?
Well, who cares about that? Think of the wages we're saving.
Lewis walks out.
What's up with him, then? He's gone potty.
On the contrary, I think he's learning some sense at last.
Saving on the wages? Saving on the wages? What's he on about? Anyway, are you all right for this afternoon, then?
No, I don't think so. Thanks, Vic. I promised to help Mum with a few things.
What, instead of the football?
Yeah. Funny girl, aren't I?
All right. She's gone potty and all. Saving on the wages.
A car pulls up in a residential street and Myrtle jumps out, leaving Sid and Chloe inside.
Excuse the rush, but I've got a lot to do. Bye.
Lot to do. Wish I had a lot to do.
Don't we all? Thanks for the list, Sid.
All right. See you down the pub tonight?
I doubt it. The Lord and Master is home.
Ah, then you'll have plenty to do.
You must be joking. Fred is strictly a Saturday nighter.
What a shocking waste.
Oh, get you. You never stop, I suppose.
Only to fill me pipe.
He slaps her bottom.
That'll do, saucy. Oh, hello, Fred. Sid just gave me a lift home.
I hope that's all he gave you.
Fred.
I thought you were having a canteen lunch.
I know, but that little twerp spanner organised another walkout.
Another strike? How am I supposed to sell our products if you don't make them?
I don't know what you're so surprised about. It's only the 13th this year.
Cool. What's it all about this time?
I suppose you could call it the take-in and put-out figures.
Take-in and put-out figures?
Technically known as the T&P figures.
Sid!
Well, I'm glad you both find it so very funny.
Yeah.
There's always trouble at the works. We seem to be having it once a week, as regular as clockwork.
I thought that's how you liked it.
Come on, Fred, I'll get you something to eat.
I could do with a bit.
Spoken like a true man.
Come on.
Chloe leads Fred up their driveway, while Sid heads next door. Letting himself in, he walks face first into a pair of pink bloomers, hanging from a line in the kitchen.
That's all I need. A face full of soggy knickers.
The kitchen is littered with dirty dishes. Meanwhile, in the living room, Sid's wife, Beatty, is talking to a budgie in its cage.
There's little boy then. There's a nice little boy. Can you say hello, Mummy? Hello, Mummy. Hello, Mummy. Go on, say it. Hello, Mummy. Look what Mummy's got for him. A nice little toy. A nice little toy for a clever little boy. Tell Mummy.
Oh, blimey, can't you give that poor bleeding bird a rest?
It's the only way you can get him to talk, keep chatting to them.
Chatting, yes, not nagging him to death.
We've had him nearly a year now. He really ought to say something.
He would if he could get a word in edgewise. You've had me for 25 years and I still have trouble.
If only he'd give a little chirp now and then, that'd be something. He really ought to make some sort of noise.
How about some dinner?
Oh, no, he's got plenty to eat.
For me, not for him.
Haven't you had anything, then?
No. Didn't Myrtle tell you there's another strike on?
I just rushed upstairs to wash her hair or something. I wondered what she was doing home lunchtime.
Well, now you know, don't you?
Did you hear that, Joey? All those naughty men are on strike again. Yes. Naughty men. Naughty men.
How about something to eat?
I've had something.
For me, for Pete's sake.
Oh. Well, could make you some beans on toast, I think.
No, nothing elaborate, thank you.
Mummy's just going to get Daddy some din-dins. Will you be all right till I get back? Will you then?
Of course he'll be all bloody right. What do you think he's going to do, chuck himself into his drink?
No, well, he doesn't like being left alone. It upsets him. And when he gets upset, he dirties his cage.
As Beatty leaves the room, Sid goes over to the cage.
She spoils you to budgery. You know that?
He closes the living room door before taking a biscuit out of his jacket pocket.
What do you think your daddy's got for you today, then? A honey ring, yes. What you got to say to that, then? Hey? Tar, Daddy? Tar, Daddy? Come on, mate, you can talk to me. Tar?
My washing's all over the floor in there. Here, what are you doing to him?
Nothing.
Oh, yes, you are. What's Nasty Daddy been doing to him then?
Nasty Daddy just bought him a honey ring, that's all. What are you going to do, report me to the RSPCA?
Oh, did the nasty man buy him a horrid old honey
dear
ring,
dear.
Well, how'd you expect him to talk if you keep stuffing him up with food?
One lousy honey ring's not going to stop him from talking. If I thought that, I'd have bought you a crate of them years ago.
Oh, never mind. Mummy will take the nasty thing away there.
That cost me a pint of beer.
Now look what's happened.
What? What?
Well, he's done something. Here, hold this. Never mind, Joey. Mummy will make him nicely clean again. Yes, he will. This will go nicely for.
Next door, Chloe's wearing a low-cut dress as she sits at the kitchen table, reading a magazine with a cup of tea. She rolls her eyes as Fred scoffs down his lunch.
He's after you, you know.
Eh? Who?
Sid Plummer.
What? Oh, Fred, you must be joking. What do you mean he's after me?
I can tell. You can't be a commercial traveller without knowing when a bloke's on the make. And I should know. I mean, I've seen the others at it.
Just because he gives me a lift home?
It's the way he looks at you. Not that I can blame him. You ask for it, flashing your legs and things all over the place.
What?
Well, I mean, look at them. Like two bald-headed convicts trying to burst out of jail.
Fred, you're jealous.
Me? I wouldn't be seen dead with a couple of things like that.
I mean of Sid.
Don't you realise he's at a dangerous age? At that age, a bloke will try almost anything.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Now, I didn't mean that, but I get very worried about you, me being away so much.
Fred, do you really think I'd want to play around with anyone else when I've got a smashing bloke like you to play around with?
I know women. When there's no prime beef handy, they'll make do with any scrag end.
Well, then you want to make sure that there is plenty of prime beef when they need it, don't you?
Yeah, steady on. I've just pressed these trousers.
Well, take them off. Why don't you?
Well, in the middle of the day.
I've got the rest of the day off.
Well, don't you realise there's a time and a place for everything?
Well, if you've got the time, I've got the place.
What, before tea?
She presses her lips against his. Bernie's giving Vic a lift on the back of his motorcycle. He drops him off at home.
Thanks, Bernie. You want to get in the game with me?
Hey, you want to... Hello, Mrs. Banner. You all right, then?
Come on, bloody well! Shut up!
What did she say? Now, what did you say?
I said turn that thing off.
It is off.
Oh, no, it is. Look, Bernie, do you want a stand ticket for the game?
Yes, please.
All right, then, pick me up at 2:30.
Right. And, Vic, I just want to say that I think you handled the men marvellous this morning.
Oh, yes, well, it's just a natural gift, that, you know, Bernie. I mean, some men are born with the quality to leadership.
And I don't agree with what most of the blokes are saying.
What's that, then?
That you're a miserable little leader. I mean, size has got nothing to do with it, has it?
I think you'd better get going, don't you?
And don't you worry, Vic. They'll laugh the other side of their faces when you're Prime Minister.
Good for nothing, little sod. Just like his bloody old father, may he rest in pieces.
Well, well, well. If it isn't my dear sweet Alma.
Don't you come slobbering over me. I'm busy just now, and I'll tell you another thing. You can tell that bloody great half-witted giant, if he brings that motorbike round here again, I'm gonna kick him where it hurts.
Mum, please.
This is a respectable and refined neighbourhood, and don't you bloody well forget it.
How can I, when you keep reminding me of it so nicely?
Oh, shut up and sit down, or you'll be late for your work.
Oh, we don't have to go back this afternoon, Mum.
Eh? You've started another bloody strike, haven't you? Haven't you? You have, haven't you?
The men had a grievance, and as their appointed representative, I could not stand by and watch them being ground underfoot.
Crap!
Mum, please. I am working, eh? For the good of the workers.
You never did a damn day's work in your life. You're like your bloody old father.
My father was a victim of the capitalist-ridden society.
Your father was a victim of a gin-ridden society, and if I hadn't taken in lodgers, where do you think we'd be now?
Well, I pay my way, don't I?
Oh, yes, I forgot about that, yes. I've been wondering what I'd do with your £4 this week. Take myself to the Bahamas, perhaps.
If me and my money aren't welcome here.
Oh, sit down on your backside and shut up. If you spend more time sitting on it and less time talking through it, we might get somewhere. Now, we've got to feed the poor, bloody, hard-working strikers, haven't we? There you are.
cold sausages.
What?
You're spoiling me, aren't you? Giving it to me 15 times in 1 week.
I'm in the dining room, Mr. Coates.
Oh, hello.
There you are.
Yes.
Lunch is all ready. Unless, of course, you want to wash your hands first.
Oh, I think I can wait until after. Thank you, Mrs. Panner.
Good. You sit here, Mr. Coates.
Oh, yes.
And I shall put a clean napkin in your ring for you.
Oh, you're much too good to be Mrs. Panner.
Not at all. I'm only too glad to have a real gentleman in the house for a change.
Ah.
Ever since my poor dear husband passed on, I've missed it, you know.
I'm sure you have. How's Victor?
All right.
I've got your favorite today.
You haven't.
I have. Nice hot steak and kidney pie.
Oh, dear, Mrs. Panner. You spoil me, you do.
Not at all.
You really do.
You nice clean boy again, then. What's he going to say? Tell Mummy. Tell Mummy. Tell Mummy.
Talk about a non-stop performance.
I thought he was going to talk just now. His beak opened and closed.
No.
Yes.
Fancy that, a bird opening and closing its beak. We'll have to write to the newspapers about that.
Well, it's a start. Generally just sits there doing nothing.
He's a natural mimic. He's copying you.
Say hello, Mummy. Hello, Mummy. Say hello, Mummy. Come
on. What's all this stuff still left on the table for? Are we having an exhibition?
Do you want me to clear it, then?
No. I can manage.
Say hello, Mummy. Hello.
Sid wraps the tablecloth around the dirty dishes and throws the bundle onto an armchair.
Don't understand it. Mrs. Phillipsburg talked in 3 months, whole sentences. Mother, there weren't very nice things it said. He had to cover it up when the vicar called, still.
Why don't you face it? He's a dead loss. We should get rid of him.
Oh, he's company for me. That was the whole idea of it, wasn't it, Joey? He'd be company for me, wouldn't you? It's all right for you. You go to work and enjoy yourself. I'm here alone all day.
You'll be alone all night if you don't shut up. Do you mind? I'm trying to work out my bets.
I wonder if he wants a little mate.
What would he want a little mate for?
Well, give him something to do.
What?
Well, you know.
No, I don't know. Birds and fishes have always been a mystery to me. What do they do?
Well, don't be silly. They bill and coo.
What with?
Well, I don't have to go into details, do I?
Blimey, males and females all look the same, don't they? I mean, we can tell what we got hold of, but how the hell can they tell?
Well, we know Joey's a he-bird, don't we?
Cock.
He is. The man in the shop said so.
Cock-bird, not he-bird.
Oh, well, it's all the same thing. You wouldn't call yourself a cock man, would you?
Opportunity would be a fine thing.
Bernie's revving his bike at the curb as Vic steps out of his house, gesturing for him to keep the noise down.
Business.
Mrs. Spanner closes the window.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize you were here, Mr. Coote.
Oh, that's all right. Agatha? Has Victor gone?
Yes, Charles. We're all alone now.
Good. How about it, then?
Oh, I don't know. I really ought to do the dishes first.
Oh, they can wait. Just a quick one.
I do find it very hard to say no to you.
You know you like it just as much as I do.
Very well, I'll draw the curtains.
Mrs. Spanner closes the curtains, then returns to the table, finding Mr. Coote holding a deck of cards.
Right?
Yes?
Cut for deal.
As Bernie and Vic ride past a cinema, Vic spots Myrtle waiting outside on her own. Tapping Bernie's helmet until he slams on his brakes, Vic gets off, clutching his groin.
Oh! What's the matter? Did you lose something?
Oh, down there. Stay there.
Vic spies as Lewis pulls up in a white convertible and Myrtle hops in.
Oh, so that's your game, is it? Bernie, follow that car.
What car?
That car, the one with Myrtle in it.
Myrtle!
Oh, come on, get going.
Right, we're off.
Bernie rides off before Vic has mounted the bike, which rips his trousers clean off. Mortified, Vic tries to cover his modesty in his skimpy briefs before hurrying away. Sid to Beatty.
What do you mean, me wasting time?
Well, you never win anything on the horses, do you?
How ignorant can you get? I've told you. I work it out scientifically. I study form.
Why don't you win sometimes?
Can I help it if they don't run scientifically?
Well, it doesn't seem right to me throwing that money away each day and us going without.
Don't notice you going without anything?
I wouldn't mind if you could just pick a winner every now and then.
You reckon you could do better then?
I couldn't do much worse, could I?
All right, let's see. I'll read out the runners in the Newmarket 3 o'clock. See if you can pick the winners, right?
Oh, well, that's silly, because we won't know the winners till this evening, will we?
No. This is yesterday's racing.
Oh.
Here we go. Anthony Watt, Jomon, Carbia, Cleopatra.
Sid, did you hear that?
Yes. His very first chirp. How about that?
Oh, it must have been one of them words you read out.
What words?
One of them horses' names.
Well, Cleopatra.
There!
Yes.
Oh, does he love that word then? Cleopatra. Cleopatra. Cleopatra.
All right. Don't tire him out.
Oh, Sid, isn't it exciting?
Yes. Well, yeah, let's face it. It's time he did something else apart from dropping good luck messages.
Oh.
Right. Now then, where were we?
Well, we don't have to go any further. If that's the one Joey liked, that's the one I'll pick.
Cleopatra?
Yes.
It was a 10-to-1 shot. It had no chance.
I don't mind. Well, what one?
By 3 lengths, Cleopatra.
There you are. What'd I tell you?
You didn't pick it. The blooming bird picked it.
Well, it won, didn't it?
You going potty or something? Just because he likes the sound of the word? What does he know about horses?
Well, I don't know, but he's done better in one race than you've done the whole season.
But that's not the point, is it? You're the one who said you could pick them better than me. So let's see you pick one. I'll read you the 3:30 runners. Diddy Ching. Fast Day Boy. Golden Gay. Tiny Tim. You keep out of this. No, where was I?
That'll do me. Tiny Tim.
It's because he chirped again.
Yes. Well, who won?
This is ridiculous. There's no reason to it.
Oh, we can't all pick scientifically, can we? Well, who won?
Tiny Tim. 4-1.
There you are, you see. Now you're satisfied. He's a clever boy, then. Did you pick 2 winners for Mummy, then?
Shut up a minute. I want to try another one.
Well, I don't feel like doing any more.
Not you, him. Now, listen, Mush. I'm going to read the runners at the 4 o'clock. Now, concentrate. You ready? Right. The Woozer, X-ray, double dwelling.
I'll see you. 2 pairs. Oh, dear, you beat me again.
I knew this was going to be my lucky day.
Now, no looking.
Oh.
As Mrs. Spanner begins to undress, a car pulls up outside and Vic gets out. The woman next door gives him a disapproving look.
Hello, Mrs. Spragg. It's got very cold, isn't it?
Not surprising.
Vic's undies are white and covered with red hearts. Mrs. Spanner's down to her slip.
I thought I heard the front door.
So did I.
Vic's creeping up the stairs as his mum steps out into the hall.
Victor! What are you doing without your trousers on?
Well, you can talk, I must say.
Hey? Oh!
Ah! Oh! Polar Prince? Silver Plate? Pollyanna?
Well, did it?
Yes. Do you realise he's picked the winner of every single race yesterday?
He must have seen the results in the paper.
That's it. What are you talking about? He can't read, can he?
Well, how do you know? You didn't even know how they made love.
Well, he's getting information somewhere, that's for sure. Where are you getting it? Come on, talk. Talk!
Oh, don't be silly. You know we can't talk.
You're quite right. Big, fat, beady-eyed, useless lump.
Don't talk to him like that. And what do you mean, useless? He's picked all the winners this afternoon.
After they'd run. Fat lot of good that is. If he could pick them before they... I wonder. What's the time?
3:30.
I can be at the betting shop by 4:30. Now, listen, genius. Listen to me. Who's a nice fella, then? Who's a big, handsome, clever lad?
What are you going to do to him?
Shut up a minute. I'm going to read you the runners of the 4:30 at Kempton today. Now, relax. Think carefully. Winners only. Here we go. Family Steps.
petticoat. Peewit the third. Peewit the third? He's never even been placed. You must be out of your tiny mind.
Oh, now look what you've done. You made him dirty his cage again.
I'm not surprised. Peewit the third. All right, I'll do it. But I'm warning you, mate. If you're wrong, I'll wring your bloody neck.
Oh, don't worry. Mummy will wring Daddy's bloody neck.
It's all right, I'll go.
Mr. Coote answers the front door in his boxers.
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Coote. Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt your dressing.
Oh, that's all right. I was just having a game of cards.
Oh, yeah, I see.
Would you care to have a game?
Not just now, thank you. I mean, I'm hardly dressed for it, am I?
Oh, we'll soon get those off you.
Oh, no, thank you. Actually, I'll come to see Vic. Oh, there he is.
Well, if you'll excuse me, I must get back to it.
Vic's confused.
I thought I might find you back here. Here's your trousers.
Oh, thanks a lot. Oh, they'd be very useful, they will. In case my legs ever were out and split up.
Well, it wasn't my fault. You told me to follow that car.
All right, all right. Did you?
What?
Followed a car.
Oh, yeah. I stuck to them like a limpet.
Where did they go?
They just drove around for a bit and then they went into a cinema.
Right, come on.
Good. If we hurry, we can just make the second half of the game.
We are not going to the football.
Oh.
Various activities of the Google.
Bernie bangs his head on an exit sign as he follows Vic into the cinema.
Is this the wonderfully interesting film you heard about?
No, it's the one after this.
Women are busily engaged in peeling vegetables and cutting up the meat.
Vic and Bernie sit down.
To do this, they use knives and other kitchen implements. Let us watch their nimble fingers at work for a few moments. A spectacle few white people have been privileged to witness.
Blimey, how much more of this?
Why don't you stop moaning?
Oh, that's choice, that is. It was bad enough missing the football without spending six bob to come and watch a bunch of idiots making an Irish stew.
And that is where we must bid a reluctant farewell to Cuckoo Island.
He's got his arm round her now.
Who?
Lewis, of course.
The film you are about to see was refused a certificate by the British Board of Film Censors, but has been granted a showing by the local council.
Well, that sounds more like it.
The Sweet Glory of Love.
I am a well-known and practicing doctor. In the artistic and beautiful picture which now follows, you will see naked men and women engaged in the various arts of sexual love. This is by no means intended to shock, but purely and frankly to demonstrate that the sexual act, far from being something to be afraid of, is in fact a great joy and pleasure which can, and indeed should, be enjoyed by everyone. First, let us familiarize ourselves with the component parts of this, the male body. And this, the female body.
God, you don't miss a trick, do you?
Oh.
Myrtle leaves.
No, wait, Myrtle, please.
Come on, Bernie. Come on, they're leaving. Come,
eh?
Come on.
Oh, no, not there. Oh, no. Oh,
let us look at the number of different ways in which we can bring the two together.
Vic rushes off, pulling away a transfixed Bernie, who bangs his head again on his way out. In a betting shop.
And that's the lineup for the last race at Doncaster. Tote prices follow. And here is the result of the 4:30 at Kempton. First, Peewit the third.
He did it! Here, Bernie. Found each way, 10-1.
Here are the runners for the 5 o'clock at Kempton.
Well, you got yourself a good win, eh, Sydney? Congratulations.
Vic and Bernie arrive on their motorbike at the Whippet Inn, a trendy club in a country house. Peeking through the window, Vic sees people dancing, whilst waitresses dressed in skimpy bunny outfits are serving drinks. Lewis and Myrtle are seated at a table at the back.
I'm glad to hear that. That makes me feel a lot better, that does.
What's the matter with you?
Oh, stone me. You dragged me away from the football match, you dragged me out of the cinema, you dragged me 20 miles into the country to watch them stuffing themselves stupid, and then you ask what's the matter with me.
You didn't have to come out with me today, you know.
No. And I can't wait not to come out with you tomorrow, either.
Listen,
I'm not going to stand by and watch that nit having it away with Myrtle.
Why not? It's better than watching him eat him.
Oh, look, I honestly didn't know it was going to be that sort of a film.
What a day. All it needs is for Dad to walk in now to make everything perfect.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Look, what's he got against me anyway?
Plenty, apart from the fact that you're the boss's son.
Is that so terrible?
Oh, you should hear him on that subject.
Oh, charming. But what makes him think I want to marry you?
Oh, he doesn't. On the contrary, had you weighed up from the start. I know all about blokes like young Mr. Lewis.
Oh, listen, Myrtle, I'm
not... Yes?
Oh, another couple of those, please. I mean, these, please.
If I were you, I'd have stuck to your first request.
I fancy the fellow with the ears.
Cor, did you see that waitress? I've never seen anything like that before. Yeah, do you think that was all real?
Of course it is. It's the only qualifications you need for that job, you know. Big prospects.
Of course, that's nothing, you know. Because in some places, they're completely topless.
Cor, nothing?
Not a stitch.
Cor, I bet that's tricky when they're serving the soup.
It's a bit dodgy when they're frying the chips and all.
Look, if I say I'm sorry about the film, sorry for being the boss's son, and sorry for having such a lousy reputation, could we start again?
And sorry for being on the make all the time with me.
From now on, just good friends.
I'll drink to that.
They sip their drinks.
How about a dance? Is that within the rules?
Yeah, provided there's no dirty work in the clinches.
Aye, aye. He's got her on the floor now.
What, in front of everybody?
Lewis and Myrtle are swaying to the music when they bump into another couple.
I'm sorry. Lewis!
Oh, hello, Roger.
I'm sorry I was a bit put out today when you called up, man.
Oh, that's all right.
No, it's all okay. You can use the old flat for tonight.
You bastard!
Wait, Myrtle, please!
As Myrtle storms off, Lewis tries to hold her back, but only succeeds in tearing off her skirt. The next day, Sid arrives at the factory. He parks his car in the space reserved for the works foreman, then climbs out and gives the bonnet a quick wipe.
Thank you, Joey.
Inside, workers are busy polishing brand new toilet bowls. Vic and Bernie are standing next to Myrtle, who's making the rounds with a tea trolley.
Funny, but I don't seem to have seen anything of young Mr. Lewis since we've been back. Have you, Bern?
No, well, he's away, isn't he? That's what you told me.
Yes, but that was a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it? No, I just wondered whether he'd left us for any reason. Have you heard anything, Mert?
I really couldn't care less what's happened to him.
You dropped me right in it there, didn't you?
Well, you didn't say it was a secret.
Hello?
Hello, Sid.
Sitting down on the job again?
Mr. Plummer, I know my job, and there's nothing in the rule book which says I cannot do it in a seated position.
I bet you said it all ago.
Mr. Plummer, if you want to bring a specific charge against
no,
me...
No, 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 sit down, enjoy yourself, relax. Go slow, work the rule if you like. Here, have a smoke as well.
Oh, I'm sorry to have kept you waiting, Fred. Come on.
Hurry in.
Hello, Dad.
Lewis, my boy, I didn't know you were back.
We've got it. That contract from the Middle East. Show him, Mr. Moore.
And if I may say so, Mr. Boggs, it was done in the face of very stiff competition. Very stiff indeed.
Signed by His Highness King Frowsy of Aslam himself.
Really? Another crowned head to add to our clientele. Excellent. What's it for?
B-days.
B-days?
Yes, 1,000 of them.
1,000 B-days?
One for each of his wives. There mustn't be any favoritism, sir.
Are you mad? We do not make B-days.
Then it's high time we started. You sign that one.
I will not have my firm associated with the manufacture of such a dubious article.
Dad, we cannot afford to turn it down. It's worth £19,000.
I don't... 19,000? That's an awful lot of money. And payment?
Immediately on completion of the order in 2 months' time.
2 months?
Yes, that was the only snag.
They have to have them in time for the Feast of Abernibal, sir.
Abernibal?
That's right. When it's His Highness's custom to visit each of his wives in turn.
It only happens once a year.
I'm not surprised to hear it. Oh, but we couldn't possibly complete such an order in 2 months. We haven't even got a design.
Yes, we have. Mr. Coote did 1 month ago. Now, come on, Dad, sign.
Oh, very well. I can't help feeling I'm going into something I shall regret.
You're looking very well this morning, Missy Moore.
Thank you, Doctor.
Can I get dressed again now?
Yes, while I put my eyes back in.
Another new suit?
Yep, and a bit of luck on the cheesies.
Again, you'll have to give me some tips.
I've got a good one for you.
What's that?
Don't bend over in a tight skirt.
Saucy?
Refuse you a bridging loan for a measly 1,500? I don't believe it.
Well, I'm afraid it's true. I hadn't wanted to bother you with our financial problems, but the bank has been carrying us for some years.
And now they're dropping us.
It seems so. We'll just have to get out of that contract somehow.
Excuse me, W.C., how much do you need to get by?
Oh, I think 1,000 would do.
Is that all, 1,000? You don't want to bother with banks. I can let you have that.
You can, Mr. Plummer.
Yeah, I haven't got it with me, but I can soon get it. Let's see. I've got an hour to the last race at Cheltenham.
The last race at Cheltenham?
That's right. I'll have to move fast. I've got to see a bird first.
A bird at Cheltenham?
You promised me you'd limit it to 2 bets a week, so he didn't overstrain himself.
Don't argue. Read out the runners.
All right, but don't blame me if nothing happens. I'm sorry about this. It's nothing to do with me, Joey. I'm not the greedy one. All right. Here we go, then. 4:30 at Cheltenham. Bob. Girlie.
Sid's gathering money that's hidden around the house.
Order form. Proper Charlie, Sweet Sue.
That's the one. What's the betting?
18 to 1.
That'll do.
18 to 1, Sweet Sue. £56. Win bet. That's exactly £1,026.
That's just what I make it, Benny.
Just what he makes it. Pints of blood, I'm giving
it. It's all right, you'll get it all back.
What's the good of getting him all back if already I've had a heart attack from paying it out?
I'm sorry, Benny. You know I don't like doing this.
You don't like doing this. I don't like doing this. So why do we go on suffering this way?
Oh, blimey, just because I've had a bit of luck for a change.
For a change, he said. For a change. Have a look at this. It's all in black and white in the ledger. In the last 3 weeks, 11 winning bets you've had. £2,433. You have taken from me.
Tell you what I'll do with you. Tomorrow, I'll come in here and I'll bet the lot and a long...
No. No more, Sid. It's finished.
Finished?
From now on, there's a limit on you. £5.
What are you talking about? What kind of a sportsman are you?
What's with the sportsman? If I was a sportsman, I'd be riding the horses.
At the factory.
Ah, Mr. Coote. I'd like you to show my father your B-Day design.
By all means, Mr. Lewis. I have it right here.
Yes, yes. If anyone has any use for this sort of thing, any idea of the cost?
Well, after basic outlay on a new mould and so on, about £7 each.
How about that, Dad? On this contract, that could be worth well over 100% profit. Well, he's hit on this marvellous labour-saving idea. You tell him, Mr. Coote.
Well, it's quite simple, really. Instead of the conventional arrangement of separate hot and cold taps and waste control tap, the whole thing can be done by one simple control, thus. Hot. Cold. Down the hole.
A couple of workers lay out some of the new B-Day taps on a work surface. Sid shows them the blueprints, then bowls are brought over. Vic's eyes widen when he sees the B-Days being assembled. He walks over to take a closer look, then picks up one of the taps and inspects it with a furrowed brow.
Drop everything.
Everyone stops in their tracks and gathers around Vic.
Counter switches.
Sid and Mr. Boggs look out from his office window and see that the front yard is deserted.
Oh, blimey, now what's happened? Excuse me.
Sid joins the squabbling workers.
What's the hold up? One at a time.
I'm sorry, Mr. Plummer, but these men cannot put this fitting onto those things.
Why not? What's the matter with it?
I stand to be corrected, of course, but I think I'm right in stating that this here is a combined tap and waste pipe control.
That's right. What about it?
So whose job is it to fit it then?
What are you talking about? Ernie can do it, can't you, Ernie?
Of course I can, Sid.
Oh no. Because Ernie is a tap fitter.
Willie can do it then.
Oh no. Because Willie, as you well know, is a waste pipe fitter.
Right, then they can both do it.
Oh, no. Because if a tap fitter does it, that means he's doing a waste pipe fitter's job. If the waste pipe fitter does it, that means he's doing a tap fitter's job.
Well, what the hell does it matter as long as they're both working?
That's what I was saying.
If you'll pardon me, you don't have a say. This is union business.
Well, it is our union, isn't it?
Exactly. And for that reason, you'll do as I bloody told you. Now, listen, under a redundancy agreement dating March 1969...
All right, we know all about that, but we're not making anybody redundant, are we?
These men are doing their own jobs and each other's jobs in the same time.
All right, Mr. Spanner. What's your solution?
It's not the union's job to give solutions.
You can say that again.
Mind you, just to show that I'm not trying to make difficulties, if you was to scrap this fitting and make two separate fittings for tap and waste pipe control...
Impossible. That basin was made for only that one fitting.
That's typical, that, isn't it? Isn't that typical? I offer them a solution and immediately they start making difficulties.
Hang on, I got it. Suppose they work together. Ernie places the fitting in the hole, connects it to the inlet pipe, then Willie connects it to the outlet and does it up. How's that?
You're missing the point, Mr. Plumber. You've still got two men doing two men's jobs in the same time.
What?
Which is the same as one man doing one man's job in half the time.
And what's wrong with that?
Well, crikey, if every worker did his job in half the time, the country would soon be in a right old mess, wouldn't it? Bernie?
Now, wait a minute. You can't bring him out.
I'm sorry. Until I acquaint the Union General Secretary with all the facts, you'll leave me no alternative.
Everybody out!
The workers march out. Later, a group of them is picketing outside the factory. Vic's standing on the side, holding a sign reading, One Man, One Job.
Come on, brothers, keep the line moving.
Other signs read, B-Day's unfair to workers, fair dues for all. Mr. Boggs dictates a letter to Miss Withering.
Messrs. Wade, Ceramics Limited. Dear sirs, with reference to our meeting last January when you expressed an interest in taking over this business, I must now advise you that I am in a position to consider a favourable offer. In the
meantime,
I beg your pardon, Miss Withering.
I'm sorry, Mr. Boggs, but I can't let you give up like this.
I've no alternative, my dear. 2 weeks of this strike has finished us.
But what is to become of me? I've given my whole life to Boggs.
Oh, naturally, I shall arrange that you be taken over with the firm.
I don't want to be taken over. I just want to carry on with you.
Well, of course, I do appreciate your loyalty, my dear.
No, you don't. That's the trouble. You never have appreciated me.
What?
I've worked for you for 30 years. And in all that time, have you ever sat me on your knee or asked me to go away for a naughty weekend? No.
Really, Miss Withers?
You've never even pinched my bottom. Ooh.
I am not in the habit of interfering with other people's seating arrangements. And now, if you don't mind, we'll continue with the dictation.
Oh, damn the dictation! I don't care what you think of me anymore. But I'm not just going to stand by and watch you throw everything away like this.
Miss Withering, you're pressing right on my keys.
Then, William, fight back. I'll be at your side. I'll work for nothing. We can do it, William. I'm sure we can do it together.
I don't want us to do it together.
You've borne all this too long, William. You've lost confidence. All you need is a good prod.
I assure you, that is the very last thing I need.
Lean on me, my dear. Take strength from me. Together, we'll see it through.
Blimey, talk about the power game.
Miss Withering rushes out.
Oh, Dad, I'm sorry we barged in on you like that. I had no idea you and Miss Withering were...
We weren't. What's more, we never have. It's just that she was upset. Worried about her future. After all, she's not getting any younger.
She's not getting any.
Yes, well, did you have any luck with the union?
None at all. The Industrial Relations Committee's come back from Rio, all right, but the Action Committee's gone off to Russia.
Oh, well, I suppose that's that.
Why aren't there any pickets on the gate this morning? It's after 9.
They've probably gone on strike, too.
Dad, look!
Workers are turning up.
I can't believe it. They're coming back!
I had a feeling they would today.
Why today?
It's the annual works outing.
Yeah.
A bus arrives.
Well, I suppose we'd better get ready, Mr. Plummer.
Ready? For what?
Dad, you're not going with them.
Yes, I am, my boy.
But why?
Because I have suddenly decided after all these years that what I've been missing is a right good booze up!
The bus is on the road. Mr. Boggs is sitting at the front, grinning like a kid. Sid leans over to Chloe.
No Fred, then?
No, he's off on another sales trip.
What a pity. Today of all days.
I know. I spent half the night trying to talk him into having it off.
I wouldn't have needed any persuading.
I bet.
You've got nothing to worry about. I should be very happy to look after you today.
Oh, that'll be nice, won't it, Maud? Mr. Plummer's offered to look after us today.
Oh, that'll be lovely, Mr. Plummer.
Pleasure.
I was just saying to Chloe, it's not much fun without a man.
You should know.
Bernie's at the back with an attractive blonde.
You've never done it before?
No. Have you?
Oh, loads of times.
What's it like?
Well, my mate Vic arranges it all. See, we get to Brighton about 12 o'clock, and then we have this slap-up meal, serviettes and all.
What do we do after?
Well, we can do anything once we're there. We can go on the pier, eat winkles, throw stones in the water.
To be frank, Scoot, I've never tried it.
Really, Miss Withering? Well, you certainly missed something.
I'm always ready to learn.
Oh, well. It's a bit difficult to show you here, but I can tell you how it's played. First of all, you deal out five cards to each person, you see.
You know, I can't think why I didn't notice you at the factory before.
The day I got taken on, they all went on strike.
Oh, you're lucky. I had to work 3 weeks before I got one.
I'm on my own today, you know.
So I gathered, yes.
Well, it's the best way, isn't it? I mean, why lumber yourself with a bird going down to Brighton? I mean, it's like taking coals to Newcastle, isn't it?
If you say so.
Oh, yes. The place is full of spare, you know. I mean, the last time we went, we had to fight them off. Like flies, they were.
Well, some people attract them, don't they? Just like dustbins.
Yeah, I suppose so. Look, if you're going to be on your own as well, I mean, I wouldn't mind showing you around.
Oh, well, thanks all the same, but I don't think you ought to disappoint all those poor flies.
Lewis is trailing behind the bus in his convertible. Catching up with the vehicle, he honks his horn, prompting Myrtle to look out the window. Lewis waves at her. She's taken aback when she sees him and turns to Vic by her side. As Lewis keeps waving, Myrtle grabs Vic's arm.
Of course, I'd love to spend the day with you, Vic.
Would you?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's all right, isn't it, eh?
Following her gaze out of the window, he sees Lewis and gives him the V sign, putting his arm around Myrtle's shoulders. Now cruising on the waterfront in Brighton, the bus comes to a stop outside a hotel.
Come on, boys and girls, it's where we're supposed to have our lunch. Come on, follow me.
Lunchtime.
The workers pour out of the vehicle excitedly and enter the lobby, where a suited man shows up to greet them.
Morning.
Ah, good morning, brother. We are the Boggs and Sons outing.
Oh, yes, and I'm sorry to tell you this, but I'm afraid we can't do you lunch.
Oh, no, I'm starving.
What? But I booked it 6 weeks ago.
Yes, I know, and I'm sorry, but our entire restaurant staff has gone on strike.
Gone on strike? But I can't do that.
Listen, who's talking?
The bar's open, of course, and there are cold snacks, but that's the best we can offer you, I'm afraid.
Well, that just isn't good enough. I mean, who do they think they are?
They're just a bunch of poor, downtrodden workers being exploited by an unscrupulous management. You should know that.
Well, what's it matter? A drink will do me.
Here, cheer up, everybody. The drinks are on me.
This way, sir, please.
Thank you. Well, don't you worry. I'm not going to let them get away with this. They are taking the bread out of the poor workers' mouths. That's what they're doing.
But there's nothing we can do about it, Vic, is there?
No. Of course there is. I am not going to be pushed around by a bunch of runny anarchists for anything. And I'm going to tell them all. Come on. Ah. Hey, you. What's all this about you lot being on strike, then?
That's right, mate, we are. What about it, then?
Tell him, Bernie.
Don't you realise you're taking the bread out of poor workers' mouths?
You don't say.
You're just a bunch of ruddy anarchists, that's what you are.
Really? Who says so?
He does.
The huge cook pushes Vic into the bar.
There you are, Mr. Spanner, just in time for your drink. Same again, all round, please, barman. Ah, there you are, Vic. Well, we certainly told in, didn't we?
Lewis wanders into the hotel. As he steps into the bar, Vic and Myrtle walk out to avoid him.
Myrtle, listen to me.
Would you please go away and stop bothering me?
No, I damn well won't. Now then, you heard what Myrtle said, so buzz off.
If you don't get out of the way, I'll knock your silly head off.
Yes,
Yes. Bernie?
Now, Mr. Lewis, we don't want no trouble.
No? Who's going to stop it, then?
Me, if I have to.
All right, go on, then. Go on, try it, then. Try it.
All right. But don't say I didn't warn you.
Lewis ducks and Bernie hits Vic.
Now you've really done it.
Oh, for God's sake.
Lewis leaves for the bar.
Gosh, I am sorry, Vic. Are you all right?
Have more drinks.
Oh, no, come on. Let's go for a walk. There's a smashing front here.
There's a smashing one there and
all.
I know. Let's all go on the pier and have a winkle.
You can have one here, just through that door. No, let's go on the pier.
The group bustles out towards the pier, with Mr. Coote and Mr. Boggs staggering on drunkenly. They all step through the pier's turnstile, and Vic pulls Myrtle along. Sid leads Chloe and a bunch of other people into a rifle range.
Nothing to it, I'll show you.
The man tending the range hands a rifle to Sid, who starts expertly shooting down some moving targets in the shape of animals. Chloe, Mr. Coote, Mr. Boggs, and Miss Withering grab a rifle each. The range attendant watches with horror as the drunken lot starts shooting the place up, firing wildly in all directions and even destroying the various toy prizes on display. Sid then leads everyone out. The attendant comes running out after them.
Skinheads!
That showed him.
There's something I won't ever go at.
Come on, then.
They walk into a pub. Bernie and his girl are poking their heads through a peek-through picture board.
Hold it perfectly still. I'm going to take it now.
Myrtle sees Lewis approaching.
How was that?
Beautiful, Bern, beautiful.
Come on, Vic. Let's have a go on the mat.
What? In front of everybody? Oh, you mean the helter skelter? Yeah, come on.
Hey, Bernie, come on. We're going on the helter skelter. No, come along now. You've had enough. You've got to have something to eat.
Now, what of it? There was a young fellow called Reg who went with a girl in the hedge. When along came his wife with a big carving knife and cut off his meat in two veins.
Vic and Myrtle come sliding down the helter skelter. Lewis is there watching them. Busy, Myrtle puts on a brave face when she sees Lewis.
Oh, Vic, darling, I've not had so much fun in all my life. Thanks.
Bernie and his girl take their turn down the slide.
We are the champions!
Oh, what was that sticking in me?
It was only my camera.
Mr. Boggs, I found a fortune teller. Shall we try it?
Fortune telling? Certainly not. Waste of money. Fakes, that's all they are. Sitting there, looking at their crystal. What's names?
Balls.
I quite agree. Absolutely ridiculous.
I don't mind having a go. I love them.
You do? Come on in. Right. Let's have a bash.
Never mind, Miss Withering. I have a couple. Much better for you.
Oh, do you think I ought to? I mean, I've heard that shellfish do very strange things. In a sex way, I mean.
Really? Ooh, let's watch him for a bit, then.
At the fortune tellers.
Anybody home?
Look, gone to lunch, back in the near future.
The foreseeable future, I hope.
We'll come back later, eh?
Wait a minute.
A wig's been left behind.
I got an idea. Hang on.
A jealous Lewis watches Vic and Myrtle having fun in bumper cars.
But I don't want my fortune told. I've already told you I don't believe in it.
Oh, you will this one, Mr. Bog. She's marvellous. Go on, be a sport.
No, all right, then.
Go on, then, in you go.
Oh.
Excuse me, dear. Customers!
I know. I saw you coming.
I beg your pardon?
In the ball. Ah, yes, you are indeed in need of help. Please be seated.
Oh, thank you. Hold on, dear.
Now then, do you wish me to prognosticate?
Oh, please do. We'll wait.
Please. I must have absolute silence to establish contact. Shh. Ah, the mists are clearing. I see a picture forming. All around you are strange-looking objects, white and shining. Tell me, do lavatories play a big part in your life?
What? Why, yes, they do, as a matter of fact.
I thought so. You are a cloakroom attendant.
Certainly not. I manufacture them. I have a factory.
Ah, I see a picture appearing. The factory is about to stop and fall into ruins.
Oh, no.
Unless...
Unless what?
There is a woman who loves you. Her name begins with W. Is it Whittling?
Withering. Miss Withering.
Withering, that's it. Your affinities will be closely entwined.
Don't be disgusting.
I see a marriage. And 14 children.
Oh, no.
Let him go, William. Come back. William. Not bad. Do you want to do me now?
Not off. Let me get these things off first.
Chloe punctures the balloons it's been using as breasts. Chased by Miss Withering, Mr. Boggs has run back to the pub. Lewis watches Bernie, his girl, Vic and Myrtle sitting in the carriages of a ghost train. An attendant pushes the carriages into the ride's dark passageway. Vic holds Myrtle tight and gives Lewis a victorious look just before entering the tunnel. Handing him some cash, Lewis says something to the attendant, who then lets him into the ride before shutting down the lights for a moment. Vic's carriage emerges, but he's on his own.
Hey, switch it off, my girl's in there!
Let me go!
No, not until you listen to what I've got to say.
Oh.
Now, do you see this?
No, I don't! What is it anyway?
It's a special marriage license.
What?
A special marriage license, my darling. Now, do we use it or do I tear it up?
Oh, Lewis.
Darling.
Vic bursts into the ride and sees Lewis kissing Myrtle.
Here. You leave her alone. Do you hear? Put her down.
Oh, no. Excuse me a minute, darling.
Ow.
Lewis walks up to Vic, then images flash up of a skeleton rising out of a coffin and a grotesque figure with a monstrous face. Hand in hand, Myrtle and Lewis run out of the ghost train. A carriage then appears on which Bernie and his girl are snogging, oblivious to Vic, who's knocked out cold and is sprawled on top of them. The bus is parked on the Brighton seafront. Standing next to it are Bernie, his girl, and Vic, who's checking his watch anxiously.
Blimey. They're supposed to be here at 6:30. What do you think they've got to?
Search me. And what do you suppose happened to old Myrtle?
I don't know, and once more, I don't care either.
Ooh, what's this coming then?
A horse-drawn cart carrying Sid, Mr. Coote, Mr. Boggs, Chloe, and Miss Withering. The drunken group climbs onto the bus. The coach travels along some roads, then stops outside a pub called the Red Lion. The rowdy workers disembark and pile into the boozer. A sign outside reads, "Coaches are welcome." Then they all rush out of the pub and climb back into the bus. The bus departs and stops outside another pub called the King's Head. More pubs follow in rapid succession. The Cricketers Inn, the Royal Naval Arms, the Seagull, the Trout Inn, and finally, the Man in Space. A sign outside another pub reads, "No private coaches." The bus briefly stops on the side of the road, allowing Sid and Mr. Boggs to run to the boot and retrieve a crate of bottles, which they carry back into the bus. The bus halts by some woodland on a country road. Everyone descends and runs into the woods for a toilet break, the men on one side of the road and the women on the other. The men hide behind trees whilst the women go deeper amongst the vegetation to do their business. Then everyone makes their way back to the bus, the men zipping up the flies as they run along. Vic and Bernie are the last to return to the coach. With everyone back on board, the return journey continues. It's night time when the bus drops Sid and Chloe outside their homes. Mr. Coote is sleeping in the open boot, nursing a bottle of beer and clutching a doll brought back from the pier. Sid and Chloe are both carrying a bunch of arcade prizes. He has his arm around her.
Looks like Fred's not home yet. No car.
No, he said he probably wouldn't be home till tomorrow night.
Oh, it's a shame, isn't it? Looks like Beatty's asleep.
Good.
Eh?
I mean, good for her.
Chloe. Oh, blimey, Chloe.
Yes, Sid?
Nothing. I think we ought to go to bed. Our beds, I mean.
Yeah, I suppose so. I would have liked to ask you in for a cup of tea.
You would?
Yeah, but you know how the neighbours round here talk.
Yes, that's true.
And I suppose you couldn't come in with me at this time of night without someone seeing us.
No, I suppose not. Unless
not that we'd be doing what they might think we'd be doing.
Oh, no, no, of course not.
But of course, if Fred did get to hear about it.
Yes, it's quite right. Not worth it, really. Not just for a cup of tea. Oh, well.
They head to their houses, walking on either side of a gate, separating their front yards.
Night, Sid.
Night. Sleep tight.
Tight's the word.
Bloody neighbours.
The next morning, Mr. Boggs is in bed, sleeping like a log. Miss Withering enters the bedroom, wearing a nightgown and carrying a cup of tea on a tray. She pops the tray onto a bedside table, then opens the curtains, flooding the room with bright daylight. She steps back to the bed.
Mr. Boggs? D? WC? D?
Thank you. Very nice. Miss Withering, what are you doing here?
This is my room, Mr. Boggs.
Oh, I see. What? Then what am I doing here?
Well, I'm afraid you were in no fit state to look after yourself, so I had two of the men bring you up here.
Oh, well, that was very thoughtful. Oh, I beg your pardon. I didn't realize they'd undressed me as well.
They didn't.
You mean you?
Don't worry. I know what a man looks like, you know. And you're not all that much different.
Miss Withering,
Yes?
Did we get off? Did I get off? Straight to sleep, I mean.
Don't you remember, William?
No, I don't.
And that is something we shall always be wondering about, isn't it?
Throwing him a cheeky look and a wink, she leaves the room, and he reclines back onto the bed, his face frozen with shock. Mrs. Spanner finds Mr. Coote sleeping on her doorstep.
Charles! Charles!
Oh, hello.
Get up and come inside at once.
Mr. Coote enters the house sheepishly, and Mrs. Spanner sniffs the air around him.
You've been drinking, haven't you?
Well, you see, Agatha, I had some rather bad news.
I don't give a damn about that, and I may as well tell you right away, Charles Coote, that I married one drunk and I'm damned if I'm going to marry another one.
Well, that was the bad news, Agatha. You see, I'm afraid we won't be able to get married now.
What do you mean? What are you talking about?
Because Mr. Boggs is going to close down the works, and that means I shall be out of a job.
Close down the works? Why?
Because of the strike.
I knew it. It's that little sod Victor's fault. He's at the back of all this. But I'll tell you something. I'm not going to let that little swine mess up my bloody life.
All right, brothers. We have got to keep a full picket line today. Because I have heard that some of the men want to come back to work.
Oh, do they?
Well, if they want to, how are we going to stop them?
Force! Yeah. Whatever happens, we have got to stand firm.
Vic distributes various clubbing apparatus to the protesters, bats, batons, and Bernie gets a tennis racket.
Can I have the cricket bat? I don't know how to play tennis.
Vic gives him a cricket bat. In Mr. Boggs's office...
It's all right, William. I'll take it.
Thank you, Miss Withering.
Now, William?
Oh, I beg your pardon. Hortense.
That's better. Boggs and Son? Mr. Boggs, personal secretary speaking. That's you, Mr. Lewis. Yes, he's here.
Hello, Lewis, my boy. I apologize for not getting home last night. Yes, I got laid up. Held up.
Oh, that's funny. I was going to say the same to you. No, there's nothing wrong. Far from it. The fact is, I got married.
Married?
Yes, that's right, to Myrtle. Myrtle Plummer.
Does her father know? That'll be a surprise.
Yes, I know it's a surprise, but I had to marry her, you see. No. I mean, it was the only way. No, we booked into a hotel. We've been driving all night, you see, and we want to get to bed.
At long last, he said under his breath.
Oh, you can say that again.
No, not you, Dad. I was speaking to Myrtle.
Look, Dad, you won't mind if I don't come back to work for a few days?
Not at all, my boy. Take all the time you want. I've decided to take up Moore's offer for the firm anyway.
Oh, thanks, Dad. I knew you'd... You what? Dad, you can't do that, Dad. Oh, no. I've got to stop him.
Oh. Myrtle appears in her nightgown.
Well, here I am at long last, darling.
He resists undressing her.
Get dressed as quickly as you can.
What?
We've got to get back right away. I'll explain later. Something important's come up.
Won't it keep?
Oh, I do hope it will.
Sid's in Mr. Boggs's office.
Excuse me, WC. Have you seen my daughter this morning?
Your daughter, Mr. Plummer? No.
She left Brighton yesterday with your blooming son and she hasn't been home all night.
I wouldn't worry about that, Mr. Plummer. Your daughter, Myrtle, has always commanded great admiration and respect. And I'm sure Lewis will see that she gets it.
That's what I'm afraid of. Now, you listen to me, WC. If your son... What's that?
Let's go and see.
They look out of the window.
Hello? Looks like a showdown.
Now, listen. We are on official strike. Pending confirmation. Now, until then, there will be no return to work.
But what's the point in our going on with the strike if it means Boggs will have to close down?
That is neither here nor there, brother. So why don't you go home and stop making trouble?
Us making trouble? All we want to do is an honest day's work.
Listen, brother, it's bolshy talk like that that got this country in a mess it's in today. Now, listen, fellas, the last thing that we want is any violence. So at the first sign of anything, don't argue, don't get involved, bash him!
Oh, well, we might as well go home again, then.
That's it, then. I don't reckon we'll have any more trouble now.
I don't know about that. Just look at this lot.
Blimey, my old woman's there.
And mine.
And mine.
Mrs. Spanner's leading a group of women.
What are you doing here?
I've come to knock some common sense into that moth-eaten brain of yours.
Oh, please, Mum. Not in front of everyone.
Ah, now, you're ashamed, and so you should be. Now then,
Shift your arse out the way and let these good people in to do their work.
I must warn you, ladies, that this strike is quite legitimate.
That's more than they say about you.
I must ask you all to disperse peacefully.
Disperse crap. Now then, are you going to get out of the way or do I have to make you?
We must stand firm on our principles.
Oh, yeah?
It is the democratic right of every worker to do whatever he likes. We must stand firm for the working
shut
man.
Up.
It is a democratic right of
shut up!
Man.
Give me that, you little squirt.
Oh, please.
Come on. Now then.
Oh.
This is what I should have done years ago.
Mom, ow.
She spanks him over her knee.
Will somebody open those damn gates?
As a humiliated Vic struggles to his feet, the horde of women storms into the factory grounds. Overjoyed, Mr. Boggs walks out to greet them.
Thank you, ladies.
Sorry about that row, Mr. Boggs, but we thought you might need a little extra help.
We'd all like to come back to work, Mr. Boggs, if that's all right.
I can't tell you how much I appreciate this moving gesture. Such a wonderful display of loyalty.
Well, cut the cackle and let's get on with the bloody work.
Oh. Well done, Beatty. All right, you can go home now.
But I thought I'd stay on for a bit, Sydney. Make a change for me.
Stay on?
Yeah.
Oh, all right then, come on.
Come on!
Oh, brothers, brothers, you're not going to let a bunch of women tell you what to do, are you?
Don't they always?
Oh, no. Oh, don't let's give me like this, brothers. Be firm. Make a stand. I mean, has it all been for nothing? There aren't alternatives, you know. Bernie, don't just stand there. Do something.
Well, I don't know about you blokes, but I'm not going to let any woman take my job. Now then, come on, let's get back to work.
All right, then. Go back to work. See if I care, but don't expect me to join you. Because nothing on earth would get me back in that place. Nothing on earth, I tell you.
Just as Vic finds himself left alone in front of the factory, an attractive brunette comes strolling up the street towards him. His face drops when he sees her.
Excuse me, but is that me from the exchange? I'm the new canteen girl. Can you tell me where I go?
Oh, yes. I was just going in myself. I'll show you what it is. Yes, we've got a lovely pair of canteens here and a nice crowd of people. Oh, you'll like it. They're very nice people.
Inside the factory, work is back to normal. Sid checks up on the team of workers assembling the B-Days. Outside, Lewis arrives in his car with Myrtle.
What's going on?
Sid slaps Maudie's bottom, who decamps, leaving him alone with Chloe.
Oh! Well, about last night, you know, when you asked me in for a cup of tea.
What about it, Sid?
Well, I'd like you to know that I wanted it badly. The tea, I mean.
Well, it's a bit late for that now, isn't it?
Oh, no. There must be another chance, surely. Next year, maybe? Even sooner, perhaps? Hello, VT. Getting all right, then?
Oh, yes, lovely. As a matter of fact, I've been thinking I think I'll take a permanent job here.
You what?
Well, it seems much more sensible than sitting at home talking to a silly bird all day, doesn't it?
Oh, I don't know. There's no harm in talking to a bird, really.
Oh, well, you should know. Here you are, dear. And anyway, I could come on the outings with you, couldn't I?
Yes, that's right.
Chloe grits her teeth, and Sid walks up to Vic, who's back in his work clothes.
What do you want?
I'm still employed here, aren't I? That is, unless you want to fire me.
Supposing I did?
That would be victimisation, wouldn't it?
Oh, no, you don't. Go on, get working.
Right. But I want it clearly understood. I'm only doing so under protest.
Knickers. Better now, Maudie?
Oh, Mr. Plummer. Oh.
Myrtle, where the hell have you been?
Now, Dad, before you stand off, it's all right. We're married.
Married?
That's right, Mr. Plummer. I hope you don't object, Dad.
Dad? Don't object? My daughter marries into management. You ask me if I object? Of course I object.
But that's absurd. I mean, your management, yourself.
How dare you insult me like that? I'm works foreman, and don't you forget it.
Didn't my dad tell you then?
Tell me what?
Well, in return for all the financial help you gave him, he's having you made a director.
Director?
Yes.
Oh, no, I'm a worker. I don't want to sit on me big fat...
Oh, come on, Lewis, I think we'd better go.
kill that bloody budgie.
Here, Vic, there's no paper in that loo.
What was that, Boone?
I just said there's no paper in that toilet again.
Well, well, well. There's a situation. Bernie?
Yep.
Don't just stand there.
Right, I know.
Nip out and buy a couple of rolls.
Hey, good lay. Hey.
Come on, you lot. Don't hang about. Carry on working.